I'd like to welcome not only you in the room, who I've already been talking to, but all of our satellites and those who, by yourself, you just tune in. Really grateful. We welcome any guys that want to know why we're so smart and holy as women. And you've chosen also. But we're grateful you're with us. We so love our satellites and home groups that use this material too. So grateful to be together. I grew up in a church that was very loving, a very small church in the Midwest, that defined a Christian by what you did not do. You accepted Jesus, and then everything else is what you don't do. We were not to smoke, not to drink alcohol. We didn't go to movies. We didn't go to dances. Vertical expression of a horizontal desire. Just so you know, that's what dancing is. Some of you have been informed. We didn't go roller skating as a youth group because that was like dancing on wheels, and so you couldn't do that. Didn't go to pool halls because they bet who would win hitting a ball with a stick. We didn't want to be part of that. And even bowling alleys were suspect because people smoked and drank beer there. So there was so much that defined who we were. The Bible tells us that we are to be a peculiar people. And we were. We were the most peculiar high schoolers you've ever met, actually. Set apart, for sure. My junior year in high school, I had made a friend. He was actually captain of the basketball team. And we got to talking and stuff like that. He was a really nice guy and such. He told me about a girl he'd been dating and broke up with. I was telling about a guy I had a crush on. We were talking like that. And so every week in our study hall, we would just sit and chat. And then he asked me out on a date. And I thought, oh, I hadn't thought of that. But he was tall, so it's like, and he was nice, so it, that's kind of all it takes for some of us, you know, just not hard to please. And so I said, yeah, that'd be fun. And he said, you want to go to a movie? Yeah, right, that's how I felt too. I don't really go to movies. Okay, you want to go bowling? I figured I could talk my way into that one. And I said, yeah, we could, but I didn't act very excited, I guess. So he says, want to walk around the mall? I can do that. I can't covet anything while I'm there, because that's bad, but I can walk around the mall. So that was my first date with probably the first guy I felt like I was in love with. And about a month or two later, he asked me to go to the prom. You see what's going on here, right? You know what they do at the prom, right? So I said, I'd love to, but I don't dance. And he said, I don't either. He's a basketball player. He says, I don't either. It wasn't about that. And a lot of people I know now don't necessarily dance at the prom. But you get to buy a fabulous dress and be seen with a tall guy who plays basketball. It's like, I was very conflicted because I loved God. I wanted to follow him. I wanted to be his person. I wanted to be obedient. All of that I felt. And then there was the prom. The Antichrist prom over here. So I was at Sunday school one Sunday, and so I asked my Sunday school teacher, who was about 112, and played the organ for our church. And I said, Ms. Isaacs, I've been invited to go to the prom by somebody I really care about, and I'm not going to dance. I don't dance at all, but I feel like I just really want to go. And she always chewed a half a stick of Wrigley's gum, always. So, Kathy, I don't know one girl today that went to the prom and is still following Jesus. I swear, not made up. It's exactly what she said to me. Jesus, prom dress. Jesus, obedience can be a very, very sticky thing. I so wanted to be obedient to God. And I so wanted to be normal for a minute and go to the prom with someone I really liked. But if I really want to love and serve God, I can't go to the prom. As I got older, went to Bible college, was studying the Bible. This is going to shock you. The word prom is not in the Bible. Not in Greek, Hebrew, Aramaic, English, any of it. The word prom is not there. Now, the word dancing is. But everywhere I found it, it appears to be a good thing. Never saw the expression, vertical expression of a horizontal desire. Never saw that in there at all. Nothing about bowling. Nothing about shooting pool. Doesn't even mention cigarettes. What does obedience look like for us? What do we obey? Who do we obey? How do we figure out what to obey? The church at large for centuries has expanded on biblical rules. I'll call them rules. Take the Ten Commandments and everything that Israel was given, and we don't follow all of that. But there's a way in which even the Pharisees in Jesus' day, and during the time of the early church, had taken the directives all the way back from the centuries of being God's people and had added hundreds and hundreds of them so that the people would be even more holy than God intended for them to be. Now, Jesus, one of the first recorded sermons that he preaches, we call the Sermon on the Mount. And this is not about doing more. It's about doing different. Because he says, you've heard it said that you are not to murder, but I'm telling you, if you hate, it's the same as murder. You've heard it said, don't have sex outside of marriage, or don't commit adultery or fornication. I'm telling you, if you lust and wish you could with that person, if you involve a person in your thought life like that, it's the same thing. Now, I think that's a much higher standard to try to live to, but Jesus is making a point here that what we do is not as important as who we are becoming and who we are. That we make decisions. Now, it shows up in what we do, obviously. But it's things that he's like saying, I'm working on something in here. I need a responsiveness. And so that's what I want to talk about, obedience. I could do 8 weeks on obedience. There's so much material in the Bible. I mean, God says, if you love me, you'll obey me. Well, you don't need more impetus if you love God than that. I love you, God, but we do a lot of buts. But he says, if you love me, you'll obey me. And so I want to talk about obedience and how we make that very personal, beyond just a cultural doctrine, what my church says I have to do or not do, what others. It's funny, the artwork for today, which, by the way, you'll get the picture today. Can we show that up here for a second, Roy? This will be the picture, as you know, in your book. And there'll be a card. I made the postcards for you this time because I love this picture. And it's out, by the way, the artwork. There's a station out in the lobby where you can see that different artwork that's been done for it. But in this, I had one of the guys on staff say, Kath, do you think that looks like you're serving wine at Bible study? I hadn't thought of that. That's a great idea. Not Wednesday morning. It would have to be Tuesday night, obviously. But what I love about this is that it's black and white, but the wine looks so rich. Now, we're not promoting wine drinking, not in any way. I personally, the Bible doesn't talk bad about wine. It says don't get drunk. So I'm not starting a new set of rules. But one of the things I love about this picture is it talks about the richness versus where the miracles aren't. And obedience leads to miracles. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. What are the absolutes, I asked you in the workbook? What were the absolutes in your home growing up? One in our house, when my mom worked two jobs, she was a single mom raising three daughters, we had a curfew. We had to be in the house, even if she wasn't there yet, home from work. So at a certain time, we had been playing in the street and stuff. It was a very small town. We were safe. And then we had to make sure we're in the house. Another absolute when I was growing up is that you tell the truth. Do not lie. If you feel like you can break a rule and you want to try, absolutely. But if you get caught, don't lie about it. Pay the consequences. So I know I must have tried it different times, danced around it, but my mother's got some kind of sixth sense. She'd look in my eyes and say, Kathy, I know, I did it. It's like, whatever. So that was an absolute. Now, there are other things that were, I would say, conditional obedience. Can I go to this party? Often it depended on where the party was, what they were doing, was it chaperoned, and those kind of things. Who are you going with? So there are absolute obediences, and there are conditional obedience. And I believe the same is true in our relationship with God. There are some things that apply to everyone. Be obedient to God, that's one. Be people of the truth. Love others. That one comes up more than any other. Love people. You have the whole 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians that says this is what love is. And I don't care how spiritual you think you are. I don't care all the spiritual things you do. If you don't do them with love, they don't matter squat. Loose translation, but that's basically what he's saying. And so there are things that apply to all of us. It's like, you know, God hasn't called me to faithfulness. Yeah, he has. I don't have the spiritual gift of kindness. It's ridiculous, huh? Some things are absolutes for all of us. But some things are conditional. Wine would be one of them. Some people feel in their heart like they are not to ever drink alcoholic beverage. That's okay. Some, I know people raised like in Italian or some other European homes. I mean, they were kids and they got little glasses of wine. It's not the wine. It's the culture and what you do for it. The Bible talks about not getting drunk. Some things I've known people who just said, God's kind of challenged me on that. I'm not to do that. So obedience has these categories, but in a way it all comes down to this. What will you obey? Whatever God's called you to, will you obey? And that's what we're going to look at today. In John 2, verses 1 to 11, there's a story many of you have heard. I'll read it to us. The next day there was a wedding celebration in the village of Cana in Galilee. Jesus' mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples were also invited to the celebration. The wine supply ran out during the festivities, so Jesus' mother told him, they have no more wine. Now, this wasn't just, oh, that's a bummer, we got more people than we thought. This is a huge cultural mistake. And there'd be a lot of shame attached to it in a very shame-oriented culture. And so you just didn't do this. The other thing I want you to know before I finish the story is that when they did a wedding celebration, there was whatever, master of ceremonies. There was the head person at the wedding who wasn't like what we would call a wedding coordinator, who's behind the scenes telling people where to go and what to do. This would have been the person who was like the master of ceremonies in a way, and he was someone significant, usually in the town and to the families and that kind of stuff. So it was someone that was revered. And we'll hear about him in just a second. So Jesus tells his mother, that's not my problem. And his mother tells his servants, because she's really listening to him, whatever he says to do, do it. Standing nearby were six stone water jars used for Jewish ceremonial washing. Each could hold 20 to 30 gallons. Jesus told the servants, fill the jars with water. When the jars had been filled, he said, now dip some out, take it to the master of ceremonies. So the servants followed his instructions. When the master of ceremonies tasted the water that was now wine, not knowing where it had come from, though of course the servants knew, he called the bridegroom over. A host always serves the best wine first, he said. Then when everyone has had a lot of drink, he brings out the less expensive wine. But you have kept the best until now. This miraculous sign at Cana in Galilee was the first time Jesus revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. When Jesus' mother says to the servants, whatever he says to do, do it. Jesus hadn't been out working miracles, because John makes a point to tell us this is the first miracle he's done, is turning water to wine. And as we unpack this, I want to keep coming back to this statement. Whatever he says to do, do it. We're going to break it down. The first is whatever. What are the restrictions or qualifications you place on God's guidance in your life? What's the whatever? It's like, well, not anything. Because most of us have maybe some rules. Are you willing to listen when he leads you in your spiritual walk or your work, but you don't want him talking to you about forgiveness? Or maybe you don't want him talking to you about your marriage or some addiction that you hold. In the rough years of my marriage, I had asked God all the time for guidance as a mom. I wanted to be a great mom. And I wanted my kids to grow up feeling loved and cared for, even though Bud and I were in a really, really bad place. What was hard for me was to ask God what he wanted me to do about Bud. Because when I did ask, he always wanted me to bend a knee, to die to myself, to serve and love Bud, not take him out, which is what I was kind of asking about doing. My prayer for Bud was that God would change him. God's prayer for me was that I would be changed. Was anything available to God? The prayer, whatever, means that we have chosen to trust God with our whole life, to believe that he's good, to believe that he's kind, to believe that he has a plan for us. Is he allowed in the whatevers of our life? Whatever he says to do, will we do it? Once the servants had decided they would obey Jesus, I don't know if they thought they had a choice, but it's like, whatever he says to do, do it. So it's like, okay, so they look at him. Fill up the ceremonial water jars. Hello? Out of wine, not water. Are we fill them up? Are we going to wash first? Are we going to? He didn't tell him to stomp grapes, go to BevMo and grab some wine. None of that. It says, fill up the water jars. Obedience sometimes takes a lot of trust. Because I found in my life so often, God does not say things that make sense to me. Lord, help me with my marriage. What do you want me to do? Kathy, I want you to die to yourself. What do you think I've been doing for the last 10 years? I can't die anymore. I've died every way I know how to die. And he just keeps saying the same thing. Sometimes what God tells us doesn't make sense. But because we know the end of the story, if we were talking to those servants, we'd say, do it. It's going to be great. You're going to love this. No, just fill up the water jars, do whatever he says. It's going to be great. But we don't know the end of our story, do we? So when God tells us to do something, and when I say that, I'm not having conversations with God all day like, oh, how are you doing? Yeah, fine. I loved the sunset last night. It was great. It's not like that. Sometimes God speaks as we sing a song, and you feel something in your mind or heart. And you just know that's not you, and it's too good to be the enemy trying to lead you astray. Just trust that God's speaking. It can come from reading his word, and come from a conversation with someone else. It comes from you being quiet and listening to God, all of that. So just know that language. This isn't a lesson on how to discern God's voice, but obedience requires that we know who he is and what he's doing. And so when I say that, please know that I'm not throwing that out there like, oh, God and I talk all the time. Sorry you don't. I don't mean that in any way. So when we know the end of their story, so we would tell them, yeah, do it. But in our story, we're like, do I trust God that he's good all the time? Do I trust that he has me in the palm of his hand? Can I trust my dreams and hopes to him? Because I'm really afraid he doesn't care about my tomorrows as much as I do. Are you willing to trust God with the end of your story, even if you don't know it? Too often we restrict our obedience through our own reasoning. Well, I'll consider that, Lord, when we know we've been directed by it. I would give up this relationship, but I may not find someone else, so let me think this through. If I don't fight for my rights, who will? If I do as you ask, Lord, Bud will think I like him and he'll win. I have to think it through. I'm not going to try to do that, Lord, because I'm not good enough to do it. I can't, and I don't want to fail. What if the servants had refused because it was too risky? Because it was too ludicrous? Because it didn't make sense to them? I'm not going to look like a fool. These servants didn't realize at first that they were in the presence of God. They stood looking into the face of God in the flesh. And he tells them to do simple things, things they can do, even if it doesn't make sense to them. They were able to fill the water jars. They knew how to dip a cup and take it to the master of ceremonies. God didn't ask them to do something they didn't have the ability to do. They just had to be willing to do whatever. Whatever he says to do, do it. Then we come to the second part of that statement, whatever he says. Now, if you apply a voice to every influence and pressure in your life, you got your mother's voice in your head, got your husband's if you have one, or your father, your siblings, your pastor, your church, doctrine, an ex-husband, friends. You've got people who were bad to you before, and their voice, they belittled you, and that voice is still there. You have our culture telling you you can do it all. You can be it all. You have our culture telling you you shouldn't be unhappy. So get rid of anything hard in your life and only do easy things. We have all these voices, all these pressures. And with this myriad of voices, with this cacophony of sound in our head, how in the world do we know what to do? How do we obey when we're not sure who to obey? And all these voices don't say the same thing. Most of the time they are conflicting in our head. But Mary said to the servants, whatever he says. Didn't say, let's get the parents of the bride and groom, let's get the master of ceremonies, let's work this out. One voice, whatever he says, do it. Can we do that? I think that's what we're supposed to be learning. Now, sometimes God speaks to us through friends. Sometimes what we hear from parents or from a spouse or whatever else, sometimes those are great things. That's exactly what God wants from us. But how do we know what to do? In Romans 12, verse 1 and 2, it says, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all he has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind he will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship him. Don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. Is that what you want? That's what I want. A good, pleasing, and perfect will for my life. I just want obedience to be easier. And one of the reasons we run into this is because we don't do the first part of this. We don't live in relationship, daily relationship with God. We just use him as a resource. Over the years, I've had people come to me, to my office and say, like, I really appreciate you making time. I don't know whether I should take this job or not. I don't know them. I don't know what their former job is, the one they want to take. And so I say, let me get my crystal ball. I keep it in my desk for these times like this. God says. It's like they want God all of a sudden. They can't handle the decision, so now they're willing to listen. He's not a resource. He's a relationship. He cares about everything. Whatever he says, how do you know his voice? If you're not learning to hear his voice, if when you hear it, you don't test it and obey and see what happens, then his voice isn't growing in you. And that's what we need. If you ignore it long enough, you never hear it. Have you ever been with other mothers and little kids? It's like a play date or something. And one of them goes, Mommy. And the mother who knows that's their kid hears. The others tune them out. That ain't mine. That on steroids is what it's like with God. That we can know his voice and hear his voice. However it is he chooses to speak to us. Our first and most important obedience is to submit to God. Before we ever decide whether to marry that bohunk, before we ever decide whether to break off a relationship, take a job, not take a job, whatever it is, before we get to the big decisions, we can live in obedience in a way where we are becoming more like Christ. And then the big decisions, and sometimes they're very big, sometimes they're very difficult decisions to make, but we're already in relationship. We already understand the voice that calls us to obedience, because it calls us to obedience not to squelch us, not to squash us down, but to give us the life we were created for. That's what obedience does. Even at the wedding ceremony, they wanted wine not to keep everybody drunk so they'd have a good time. They wanted wine because that was a celebration. They were celebrating something important, a wedding, a sacrament. Obedience touches our whole life. It's a lifestyle of discipleship. That's what God's asking, and that only comes through obedience. Finding God's will, knowing what he says to us, comes through a lifestyle commitment of being sold out to him. It's not a phone call to heaven's switchboard and say, can you give me a lead on a job? It's not God saying, I need a man, rich, making no demands, who loves you and only wants to serve me. That's all I need. Sounds ludicrous, but a lot of times, whether we put it in words or not, we're asking things like that. Most of the time, we go to God because we need an answer, and we miss this important truth. He doesn't have the answer. He is the answer. Jesus is the answer. He is the way, the truth, and the life. He is everything we need, but it takes relationship. Obedience can be very difficult, but it's the only place life is found. It's that intimate relationship with the one who is the answer to anything we need. In Colossians 1, verse 9 and 10, Paul says to the church, so we have not stopped praying for you since we first heard about you. We ask God to give you complete knowledge of his will and give you spiritual wisdom and understanding. Wouldn't you love to have complete knowledge of his will, spiritual understanding, and wisdom? Then the way you live will always honor and please the Lord, and your lives will produce every kind of good fruit. All the while you'll grow as you learn to know God better and better. This is a way of life. In John 10, Jesus talks about being the good shepherd, and he said, I know my sheep, and my sheep know my voice. Do you know his voice? Do you want to know his voice? It's not an absolute for any of us. I don't think we arrive there, but we better be on that trajectory, moving toward it, knowing his voice, discerning who he is and what he's talking to us about. How do we do that? Well, his word. When you read the word, do it with an open mind and heart. God, teach me this. Don't avoid the things that are hard or that you think are going to be too much work. Let him speak to you. He'll never ask you to do anything he hasn't equipped you to do. And that's not just a bumper sticker statement. That's the truth. You can do whatever God calls you to. Through prayer, not just talking, telling him what you need, but through listening. God, I'm going to sit quiet. Start with 30 seconds. It'll feel like 10 minutes, but start with 30 seconds. Sit quiet and don't let your brain travel to everything else you have to do that day. Learn to listen. It's a developed skill. Through worship, we sing the most fabulous songs. I think, good Lord, the lyrics and stuff are so beautiful. We hear God through that. Through our community, pay attention. Pay attention. God, how will you speak to me today? Just pay attention. Expect God to care and to be involved in your life. There's influence that bears pressure on you and I all the time. All the things we should do, shouldn't do, should be, shouldn't be. All the time, we begin to look like trained monkeys sometimes, trying to do all the things we're supposed to. And all God says is, will you rest and will you trust me? Will you walk in obedience with me? Whatever he says to do, do it. The third thing is the do. Seems pretty straightforward, just do it. If I ask what keeps you from doing what you know God wants you to do, would you say? What would you say? I got it. What'd you say? Pride. Well, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to look foolish. Sometimes it's too risky. I've got too much on my plate. I can't. I just don't want to do it. Afraid that our dreams and desires will be overlooked by him. That if we do what he asks us, he doesn't understand how important this is to us. He does. We don't have the courage. I just can't. I don't have the courage. And sometimes it's as simple as God saying, I want you to just go talk to that person. I can't. Invite your neighbor to church. I can't do that. And all these things that we can do, we choose not to, and you have to own that. Just own that you're saying no. Like I told you growing up, my mom said, just tell me the truth when I ask you. At least own the fact that you're saying no to God. Don't mask it in something else. God says, I want you to talk to that person. Lord, I will. When I feel like it's the right moment, like this, like just say, no, Lord, I won't. Own it if you're going to say no. And then you'll live out what a no does in your life. I don't mean that as a threat. I'm just saying we choose how we will live. Let me say this. Do it. Whatever God says to you, do it. Do it. Do it afraid. Do it hesitantly. Do it with limited ability. Do it embarrassed. Do it whatever. Do it poorly. But do it. I talked to a guy years ago who wanted to talk to me about giving, tithing at the church. So I explained what it was and that the New Testament talks a lot about being generous, giving out of a full heart. And so I explained the whole thing to him. He goes, well, then I'm going to wait to tithe until I can do it generously with a full heart. Seriously. You think one day you're going to wake up and say, I think I'll give away a tenth of my income. It's not a feeling, is it? If you've been a steady giver, you know it's just something you do. Or if you're waiting to feel obedient, I don't think it's going to come. We are amazing and strange people. We live in relationship with a perfect, loving, kind, good God who could not love us more. He's done everything he could to be in relationship with us. He came to earth as a man. He was humiliated and suffered physically, emotionally, spiritually, all of it. The Father turned his face away, we just sang, on the cross. He was left utterly alone. He did all that so that you would love him and he could love you. And we're in relationship with this God and we go, I don't know. I don't know if I have enough money to tithe. Now, this isn't a talk on giving, but whatever the thing is, I can't forgive them. Or I'm not going to talk to my neighbor. It's too embarrassing. Embarrassing? He was stripped naked, walked through the streets carrying a cross, hung on a cross. He was beat and spit on. We say, well, but that was his job. I'm just trying to make, whatever it is you think keeps you from it, ladies, whatever he says, large or small, hard or easy, just do it. We argue, we stick our fingers in our ear, we barter with him. I've told you the story before. When I worked corporate, I was in my car at a stoplight out in Wilshire District, headed to the office, just sitting there. Wasn't praying, wasn't doing anything. I think the radio was on. And I heard in my heart, quit your job. So I thought, I'm going to pray about that. Who are you going to pray to? I'm going to think about it. I had no doubt who was telling me to quit my job. Because I wasn't thinking it, I can guarantee you that. I didn't think the devil was trying to get into my life by telling me to quit my job. That was hard to wrestle through. What are you going to do? I'm either going to do it or I'm not. Ladies, your brain is not big enough to fully comprehend the life God has for you. Nor is mine. But he has goodness. When I did quit my job, a year later, Mark asked if I'd come on staff with him here as he'd taken over the senior pastor job. It was 25 years ago. How could I have dreamed this? I couldn't have. But I had a moment in my life when I could have said no because the money was good. I was highly respected, well-favored there. I was somebody. And I quit that to become God's person in a deeper way. Couldn't have dreamed it up, but he could. Whether it's breaking an engagement, quitting a job, whatever it might be, it may be something as direct as, I don't want you to go R-rated movies anymore. Or I don't want you to drink alcohol. It may be, I want you to like not have that person for a friend anymore, at least not a close friend. I don't want you to use that person as your counselor. It can be so small. It can be so big, but whatever he says, do it. God will not let us live mediocre lives. He won't let us be contented with it. He'll keep coming after us because of his grace. But we get to decide who we will obey, ourselves, someone else in our life, or the God who made us and knows the end of our story. Do it afraid, do it hesitantly, do it blindly. but do it. And finally, whatever he says to do, do it. Now, the reason I stress this is some of you, or us, are what I would call overachievers. God says, I want you to invite that person to church. It's pretty direct. Do that. Invite that person to church. Some of us take it on as a mission. So we invite them 3 times a day. We pressure them and tell them they're going to hell if they don't come to our church. We ask them to come to lunch with us so we can preach to them as they eat. We do too much. Just do it. Whatever God calls you to do, do it. All the servants had to do was fill the water jars. Next step, take a cup of it. They never had to turn water to wine. They didn't have to step on any grapes. They didn't have to go to the store. All they had to do was what God told them to do, what Jesus told them to do. Fill the water jars, okay? Take a cup of water out of the water jars. Somewhere in that obedience, between filling the cup and getting it to the master of the ceremonies, there was a miracle. Don't you want the miracles? Wouldn't have had it without the obedience. Whatever he says, do it. Some of us try to do the minimum. Not the heart of what Jesus is calling us to. I've told many of you this story before, but when I was 15, I was at summer camp and was in like a worship kind of thing and was sitting there, and I heard really clearly in my heart, go to Life Bible College in Los Angeles. I thought, well, that can't be God because I'm going to Northern Illinois University. I want to be a teacher. I already had my plan. I was 15. I knew everything, for Pete's sake. And I just sat there and ignored it. And then I heard again, honestly, this clearly in my head, I want you to go to Life Bible College in Los Angeles. So I responded, I don't want to be a missionary. Because I didn't. I want you to go to Life Bible College in Los Angeles. I know. Did you hear the part about the missionary? So then the lunch bell rang, and I have food issues, so I left and went to have lunch. The next day in worship, the same thing until I said yes. See, I wanted to barter with God. Sometimes he says, do this. Okay, I will, but. So let's say the servants, he says, now take a cup of it. And they said, well, I'll scoop it up, but you take it to the master of ceremonies. We want to barter, somehow protect ourselves. Whatever he says, do it. We want guarantees. I guarantee you if you do this, then this will happen. We don't get them. If I break this engagement, do you promise me that you'll bring me somebody else? No. If he asks you to quit your job, do you want me to become homeless? Am I going to have a ministry among the homeless? I don't want to. Just do what he says. The result of the risky business at the wedding was that they had a great party. I have backed away from obedience at times in my life and always only felt regret. Always only felt regret. In obedience, even the toughest obedience, I have found celebration. When my husband Bud died 5 years ago, one of the greatest gifts God has given me was that I grieved deeply. That may sound odd to you. That was my celebration. Because in the hard years, I would have felt such guilt because I would have been relieved. I know that sounds awful, but that's the truth for me. And yet, because of obedience in Bud and obedience in me, God was able to do something. And my celebration, which is sounds very odd to you, I know, I celebrated that I was weeping and grieving deeply. It's who God is. We don't know what our tomorrows look like, but we can show up ready for them if we'll walk in obedience. The circumstances of our tomorrows are unique and uncertain for all of us. We don't control any of it, but we live in the palm of the hand of the God who made us. His kindness and goodness has all of it. We know it says in the Bible that God says, I know the plans I have for you to prosper you, give you hope in a future. That's the God we obey. Does that mean every day is delightful? No. Some days are really hard. The richness of the celebration that the best wine was enjoyed at that wedding. The best wine came out of obedience, not planning. Don't you want the best of what God has? The sweetest, the best. Imagine more celebrations in our life because of more obedience. Whatever, whatever he says to do it. Say it with me. Whatever he says to do, do it. Very good. Father, would you plant that truth in our hearts? May we be transformed and become people of such obedience that we're shocked and the people around us are shocked. And that your kingdom blooms and blossoms and thrives because your people have chosen to trust you and to obey you in all things. It's a big ask, but we ask it in Christ's name. Amen. God bless you, ladies. Love you.